Welcome back to the Failure Files on Pipeline Things. In this episode, we go to the leading or one of the leading causes of pipeline failures in the United States, and that's third-party damage. So, you know, as we take a look at Type A sleeves, Macondo, and Boeing, you often had clear signs or things that were missed or maybe even ignored in those failures. I think the challenge when we take a look at third-party damage for the first time on Pipeline Things is this almost this feeling of, what more can you do? And what does an effective 811 campaign look like? Many stories in this episode, a bit sobering, but it is a great episode to really reflect on what we as integrity engineers work to prevent.
Giant fireball there.
Police yell for motorists to get moving as a huge wall of smoke and flame.
Homes destroyed after a huge explosion last night. It was apparently caused by a broken gas.
All right, on this episode of Pipeline Things, we continue our Failure Files series. And this, the threat we're going to talk about today is probably long overdue.
Yeah.
But it's a tough one to talk about because it's third-party damage. And I think the reason it's tough is from an integrity management perspective, we like to acquire data to prevent failures, right? But when you think about third-party damage, and sometimes it doesn't feel preventable in the same sense. I'm not saying it's not preventable, but it doesn't feel preventable in the same sense.
Because it's time independent.
And you're dealing with...
You can't correlate it. It's hard to engineer.
You're dealing with other people that are outside of your control, things that you can't potentially control.
Yeah.
But I will say this much, Chris, and I want to prep the audience. This might be one of my favorite episodes to have presented. I felt like it was both sobering, but also like just kind of... wow factor shocking. So we're going to cover four separate failures here. So buckle up. But before we do, I want to give you guys some statistics. I learned some things here. First off, is there is an outfit called the Common Ground Alliance, and they have a tool called the Damage Incident Reporting Tool, or DIRT for short. I mean, how clever is that? Ooh. Damage Incident Reporting
Tool. So they're like dirt merchants.
For the US and Canada, different type, but similar. And they have this great website dashboard that you can go and filter things. So I'm just going to give you some statistics. In 2023, there were 167,000 reported damages across the United States and Canada. That's for all lines, right? So telecommunications, everything. But what I want to brace you for...
For both US and Canada.
Yes. In 2022, there are 168,000. And in 2021, there's 160,000. So unfortunately, we're not getting any better. Like when you look at the historical statistics for third-party damage, unfortunately, we're not improving. The leading utility to be struck is, do you want to guess?
Telecommunication. Because I might have done that before.
That's believable.
Yeah. Those lines are pretty thin, and they're at the surface. They're not very deep.
Followed by, yours wouldn't count though, because it just runs up to your house probably. Followed by
pipelines.
Natural gas.
Yeah, it has to be pipelines.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Considering all utilities, fun facts for the audience, considering all utilities, landscaping work was the most frequently associated with the top root cause, which is not calling 811. I was waiting for it to drop one you there.
Yeah, that's also probably telecom incidents, though.
Yep. So again,
because they don't bury those very well.
Filtered by natural gas. Filtered by natural gas. So if we look at just natural gas incidents and look at the root causes, 20% are attributed to a locating issue. So late missing or incorrect locates. Okay. So you called 811 and they didn't get out there within 48 hours, or they didn't locate it at all, or they mislocated it.
Yeah. They missed the line.
30%, one third of all incidents, no locate requests. And we're going to see that as a common theme in today's
incidents.
So about a
third.
Yep. And 35% were attributed to excavator. So, and half of these, the excavator failed to maintain correct distance even after locating the pipeline. I mean, so it was really shocking. Again, I encourage the audience, go take a look at the DIRT tool online. But let's jump into the first failure. So I'm gonna have to take you back, and I did these failures in order of chronological significance. So the first failure is November 4th in 2003, and it's the Magellan Pipeline in Brandon, Minnesota. So what's interesting about this is the Brandon, Minnesota, Magellan operates a 6-inch line that's hit by a farmer operating a chisel plow. Right. And this pipeline reports refined products. So the guy hits the pipeline. He immediately jumps out of place and he goes to call 911. Amazingly, the pipeline doesn't explode. And in fact, it only releases about 24 gallons of unleaded gasoline into the soil. Right. But there
24 gallons or 24 barrels?
24 barrels. Sorry. Thank
you. That's a big difference.
It is, but it's still in the consequence of spills. Sure. It's small. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Especially that there was no ignition or anything like that. Right. But this one incident sets the stage for the remainder of them in terms of what happened. So first off, the guy who's digging doesn't call 811 and the operator has no prior notice of excavating activity. What's really crazy about this is Magellan is aware that the pipeline had low depth of cover. They were aware that it was 9 inches in some spots from field measurements. And 6 weeks prior to the incident, they had conversations with the tenant farmer. So 6 weeks before he strikes the pipeline, they're talking to the farmer about, hey, we have low depth of cover in these areas. In follow-up interviews, the farmer says he was unaware that this specific line had low depth of cover, but he was aware that they were doing depth of cover projects in other locations adjacent.
He also might have wondered, like, well, how low is low?
Yeah.
Well, I won't till that deep. We're okay.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's fair, but I think it's shocking to me because, again, this isn't the only time we're going to see this, where the pipeline operator actually had contact with the person that's responsible for the incident at what I'm going to call some reasonable time in the future. We're not talking about decades, maybe years, but not even like more than 5 years in most cases, right? And so again, in a very rare case, in this particular case, the tenant, the landowner, and Magellan actually agreed that there had been a communication breakdown, and they all kind of like shook hands and made nice, which is not typically how this ends, probably because there was no incidents. The farmer agreed to start sending prior notification and communicate all of his planned plow activities. Magellan accepted, and they actually entered into a consent decree. And you might say, whoa, where the hell does a consent decree come into this? Because Magellan had acquired this line from Williams nearly 8 years earlier, they were actually aware of low depth of cover and were in the process of fixing it. But the consent decree comes in because it had been 8 years and they hadn't rectified the low depth of cover. So low depth of cover, unaware operator, pipeline strike number one. I'm going to take you to pipeline strike.
I hope we don't strike out.
Number two. That was clever, kind of, maybe. July 5th, 2010, the Dixie Pipeline Company in Thompson, Georgia, right? This one, again, is another one that just, it blew my mind reading it. And all of these audience, all of these are available on PHMSA's website. The incident occurs on July 5th, 2010 at 10:40 a.m. on a 20-acre pond. So the land has a 20-acre pond and two mobile homes and a storage yard. Facility.
I hope this doesn't have anything to do with July 4th celebrations.
Nope. No, it doesn't.
No hangovers involved?
Nope. Doesn't. But the property owner, Paul McCorkle, struck the 8-inch propane pipeline with his bulldozer while grading dirt along the edge of the road, right? The strike punctures the pipe, and Mr. McCorkle is injured, but he's not killed. He takes off running. The escaping gas forms a vapor cloud, which hovers over the pond and the lower lying areas. After he flees the scene to go report the incident from a nearby home, unfortunately, his son, who's living on the property in one of the mobile homes, walks outside, calls 911, and he's standing outside when the gas cloud ignites and his son is killed in the incident, right? It destroyed, obviously, both mobile homes and killed a son. So this is one of the travesties we have, which is a lot of times you have fatalities that result when third-party damage. So a lot of times we might get away. Like we talked about other failures where you don't have fatalities. I feel like it's rare in the case of third-party damage to walk away and not have a fatality. The investigation determined that Mr. McCorkle did not call 811, which was required by Georgia state law. And this is where it gets even crazier, right? So According to Dixie Pipeline records, a Dixie representative had met with Mr. McCorkle 5 years earlier because he was doing work on their right-of-way. So he was clearing his ground above their right-of-way. They meet with him. They identified it from an aerial patrol. They saw the excavating equipment above the right-of-way. They meet with him, and the representative, they had, I didn't realize this, the pipeline operators, when they do this, they have detailed records of all this.
Yeah.
They have records of the whole conversation. And the person stresses the importance of calling 811 and making a one call. And Mr. McCorkle says, I'm going to do this. Don't worry. Well, 5 years later, he either didn't do it or didn't take the message seriously. And one more surprising fact, Mr. McCorkle was a first-term county commissioner. So he was a government official. Right? I mean, like, this is where I get like, holy cow, it's a government official. And I don't know why that makes it more surprising to me. But it does, right? It's not like you're just your average Joe operating a backhoe, right? So again, I think, you know, you see this pattern of pipeline operator contacts individual, individual digs, individual strikes pipeline because they made no attempt.
Right? Yeah, they forgot. So,
and unfortunately, this one has tragic consequences. I mean, the guy's son died. I'm sure I genuinely feel for this gentleman that he has to live with that on his conscience moving forward. So,
and it's a significant incident, right? I mean, it was about 150 yards away from where the line was struck. I mean, so pretty significant incident.
Yes. I'm glad you brought that up. What Chris is referring to is the gentleman that was killed was 150 feet yards away, 450 feet away when it ignited. That is worthwhile to think about. It wasn't like he was right next to the pipeline when it happened. So
Just the threat of it, you know, because the cloud of the propane, I mean, it's just a different type of damage that you try to mitigate. Unfortunate. Next one.
Yep, the next one up. So this one is going to, again, be Magellan Pipeline in Lawrence, Kansas. And we are in October 6, 2011, right? This is, again, another super scary one. Magellan operates a 10-inch diesel fuel line, and it's punctured by the tooth of a front end loader that's owned and operated by R.D. Johnson Excavating, right? So R.D. Johnson is on the site of the property of Mike Garber Enterprises, and they're building a pond for this guy. I don't think that's altogether uncommon either.
Yep.
What's particularly scary about this one, right? So he's digging and boom, he punctures it. Is when they dug up the pipeline, they found that it had been struck multiple times upstream, right? And I've even got a photo here, right? So if you take a look at the photo, I don't know if Ms. Producer could put this online, but look how many times that he had struck the pipeline upstream there, right? It's like all up and down the pipeline. Again, the total cost to fix this was $667,000 in 2011 dollars.
It almost makes you want to think about the rhetoric there a little bit, right? It's like, this is an excavating company, so they should be pros at this, right? And again, this is not fact, and I'm being a little bit facetious here, but you could almost imagine being like, oh no, I've been here before. And you know, you just nudge the pipe a little bit, you know where your boundary is, and you move over a little bit.
Statistics are on our side, Chris. Do you think the excavating company, when they're digging a pond, do you think that they called 811?
Of course they did, because they're pros.
Unfortunately, the answer is they did not.
They didn't need to, because they had already struck the line, so they knew where it was.
Right. So it's a travesty. Again, so here's the sad part. So two failures. Number one, the pipeline was marked. Like, and I even put pictures of where the pipeline markers were on the road.
Oh, so that's something else to say, right? So it's not that 811 came out and marked the lines, but rather there are pipeline right-of-way markers that were visible and clear. And you can create a line of sight from what the trajectory of the line is. And you generally can say, hey, I need to stay away from the center line.
Yep. The employee that did this had been working for 2 years and said he didn't notice the markers, right? But regardless, his employer, R.D. Johnson, did not provide notice to excavate or issue a one call. Both the company, the digging company, and the owner were included in Magellan's Pubnus Awareness Campaign. So the owner had been mailed a brochure in 2007, 4 years earlier, and the excavator company had previously identified the excavator in the right-of-way. So Magellan had tagged this particular excavator as being in their right-of-way before. And they had notified the company in September 2010, right? So again, we see, I feel like from an operator perspective, I have to read and I'm like, what else can the operator have done here? Like, it feels like it's a question I keep coming back to.
We'll save questions for later. Go, keep going. Story time with the Rhett continues.
And this last one. So this last one, to the audience, I really want to encourage you. There's Miss Producer. We'll put a link. There is a really well done. It's about a 15-minute video that was actually made on this failure. Very, very well done. And it's an emotional video. It's one that really brings home the reality of the people that are involved. So this is December 5th, 2017. And this is a Kinder Morgan line in Dixon, Illinois. So on December 5th, there are two owners and two employees of M&R Farms that are installing drainage tiles on a property that they had leased, right? So for the audiences out there, if you don't know what a drainage tile is, think a French drain. So basically when they need to get like water away from a location, what they do is they dig a trench. And then in that trench, they place what looks like a French drain, which is nothing more than corrugated pipe that has holes in it. The water can seep in, but the soil doesn't. And then it runs to a creek or somewhere else. And it lets them keep that particular part of the place where they're trying to farm dry. So one of the owners is on a 500 horsepower tractor pulling a tiling plow, right? He got through about 400 feet of the installation, and then the tilling plow becomes lodged on an object, but he doesn't know what he's hit, right? So according, and you watch in the video, they say, hey, this wasn't uncommon. You know, we thought we hit a boulder or something like that. So what he does is the other M&R personnel hooks up a second tractor to the front of the tiling tractor.
Pull me out, buddy.
Pull me out.
Pull me out. Have you ever pulled anybody out?
He said that. He says in the video that the tractor tires, the treads are spinning out on the ground. And of course, because they had hooked a pipeline and they weren't aware of that.
And it's an unfortunate situation. If you ever pulled anybody out, you know what your mentality is when you're the guy towing? I got this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get you out. And like, that's the mentality, right?
And when you watch video, these were experienced farmers. Like, these were not your average Joes. These were two guys who owned the company. They were not like hired hands fresh out of high school or something. These were guys with families. These were guys that were experienced. But unfortunately, you know, the story doesn't end well, right? So what happens is they had hooked the pipeline. The pipeline ruptures. The guy in the tractor feeding the plow with tile, he's launched out of the tractor, which is the only thing that saves his life. He takes off running and he manages to escape. The employee on the front backhoe also got off and ran, but he's burned over 60% of his body. In the video, you actually do get a chance to meet him. And then the other two gentlemen are both killed that are standing next to it. So two people are killed and one is severely injured. The fourth is ejected and gets away with minor injuries. I do want to take a sidebar moment here, which is the report mentions that the automated valves closed immediately. It's like PHMSA sidebars here to stress the importance of remote operated valves. It still takes 51 minutes for the line to blow down, but I want to read to you what came out of the PHMSA report because it struck me, because when we go to these meetings, Chris, automated valves are still a hot topic, right? It says, the automated valves helped mitigate the intensity of the fire, allowed first responders to secure the area, and facilitated removal of the bodies. So again, I think we see PHMSA's position on AR valves even here. So, all right, M&R Farms, let's go back to it. Here's, I think, where the sad part gets. M&R Farms had contacted the landowner before to discuss additional tiling. The landowner claims he remembers discussing the one-call program with them. And M&R, I told you they were experienced farmers, they had a history of obtaining one-call tickets prior to digging. Records showed they had made 18 notifications in 2016 and 8 in 2017. The surviving owner had notifications that they showed PHMSA of one-call tickets. A review of Kinder Morgan's damage prevention program showed that 10 mailings were sent to them between 2011 and 2016. They had records of two phone calls between Kinder Morgan and M&R Farms in 2012 and 2014. And there were 10 additional records or contact with M&R and representatives of Kinder Morgan. Chris, that's a ton of contact. Like, I look at it and I ask, there were line markers were on the pipeline right away. Now, we might argue they were 1,800 feet away, which is probably further than you could maybe see by line of sight. So I go to my next cause. pipeline was buried at a depth and like there were no issues with shallow depth of cover here. It was buried below what would be required for current regulatory requirements, but the tiling work took a depth of 4 feet, was occurring at a depth of 4 feet when it struck the pipeline. To me, that's just like shocking. And I don't think anything captures it better than the end of the PHMSA report. And I'm going to read it before we go to break. Despite M&R Farms' familiarity with excavation notices and their receipt of public awareness documentation, including excavation safety information provided by Kinder Morgan, no excavation notice was provided for this tiling work. It is possible that this incident might have been prevented if such a notice was provided. We get back from the break. We're going to discuss third-party damage. Thank you. All right, welcome back. As we talk about lessons learned and actions on the episode for third-party damage on the failure files. So just warning to the audience, Chris is going to struggle with this because what he wants is go find it with ILI and prevent it. And third-party damage doesn't roll that
it's
way.
It's time independent, bro. It doesn't work that way.
I know, but it still doesn't mean that we can't, you know, do something about it. So here's a tack I want to take, right? So I already mentioned the Common Ground Alliance before, right? This organization is funded by more than 70 top-tier member companies, including more than 250 corporate members and 1,800 individual participants, right? So corporate sponsors include Kinder Morgan, TC Energy, PHMSA, so on and
there's a bunch
so
of
forth,
them.
Right? There's a lot. And they work to promote the 811 messaging. I think one key takeaway from this to everybody that's listening, and you're either going to, you probably, most of the audience might do what you did, which is roll their eyes when I say this.
Oh, I didn't roll mine.
No, you do.
I think this is very important.
I think 811 is important to us. In other words, here's the question I'll say.
State Chris, your question.
How often do you call 811 when you're working in your yard?
I call 811 every single time it matters.
What is every single
And every single time.
Hold on, stop. Including your contractors that you hire to work in. So I know, and the audience knows, that you dug up half of your backyard in search of a leaking pool pipe from a tree that was struck. Did you call 811 before you dug up that 100 feet of pipe in your backyard?
I did call 811 before I dug that time.
You did?
Yeah. It was a couple years before, but I did call 811 before I dug the pipe. So I know exactly where all the lines run in my backyard.
You replaced any fencing?
I have not. But when I put my fence up, I did call 811.
Okay.
Because I knew I was digging. Like I was digging with one of those augers that you can do the fence.
Let me ask you a question. Yeah. When you hear that family is going to be doing work. So I give you a really good, my dad, I know darn good.
I was
well,
going to ask you
up,
this.
My dad dug up half his backyard to install a sprinkler system in Waller County. And I am Montgomery County, not Waller County, Montgomery County. And I'm 100% certain he did not call 811 before he did.
Did you get on to him about that?
You know, no, I didn't because it was probably nearly a decade ago. And to be honest, I hope this episode kind of made an impact on me because I think what I've discovered is, you know, I want to rephrase it this way. If we as pipeline integrity professionals who understand the destructive power of a pipeline when it fails.
Yes.
Do not call 811 every time, not when under the guise of your judgment, it matters.
I am calibrated.
How do you expect the public to?
I am calibrated to data integration.
Look,
and I integrate
average,
data.
The average public does not understand pipelines. That's the truth.
Yeah.
Or their destructive. So look, I got another example I want to give you here. And I'm going to give a shout out to somebody that I know is a listener. Don't know how mm-hmm. much he listens, but he has reached out to us before. And we'll tag him in the episode, which is
this
Roland
will,
Palmer
This
Jones.
Will be after minute 20. So I don't know if he'll still be listening.
It's cool. It is after minute 20. Roland, hope you're still with us. I actually, when I was preparing this episode, remembered a LinkedIn post that Roland had done nearly 7 months ago. And Roland talked about his 80-year-old father was doing work on some land he had purchased to dig and knew there was a pipeline. And that's the critical thing. Knew there was a pipeline crossing it and reached out to his son, Roland, to say, should I get an 811 call, their equivalent in England about this, you know, this thing. And he gives us some great, great quotes here that I think are relevant. He says, the contractor thinks it'll just be a waste of my time to contact the pipeline operator. I assume that the pipeline runs straight between the marker post at the field boundaries. I've hired a nifty trenching machine. It'll be much quicker than a backhoe, right? Do I have to hand excavate to find the top of the pipe? I'm a bit old for that, and it'll take ages. Like, I love this in this post that Roland did, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, Roland is now, like, the he's one of the VPs at Rosen. And I'm like, this guy
COO
is,
now.
Yeah, COO. This guy's talking about his struggles getting his father to understand it.
You know what would have been clever is if he would have told us that if he wanted to bring his dog out, because his dog likes to dig holes. Maybe his dog could have helped. That would have been really clever if that would have been one of his responses. Real lives, real pipelines is the tagline.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Real lives, real consequences.
Right. So, again, I think, Roland, I want to say thanks for sharing. I do think what is, and that's my heart behind this message, Chris, is I think it's incumbent upon us as pipeline professionals, when we know that our friends, our family, people that we know are doing work, it's our job to promote that message to some extent. We might not think about it that way.
It's kind of like it's kind of like you have to have the talk with your friends, right? It's kind of like, oh,
you have to be
it's
that
like
guy.
Your buddy calls you and he's like, yeah, I'm going to put this brand new fence guy. In. And you're like, hey, dude, like, I don't want to do it in front of all the guys, but I need you to call 811. Like, what is that? And then you got to have that moment to educate him about what 811 is, right? Or they buy some new cool machinery.
You got
to
be the uncool
ranch,
guy.
Yep. And you got to have the talk with them and be like, hey, let me explain some things to you.
Yep. So, you know, and again, I did, like, I remember most recently whenever we put in, when we put in the generator, I had to do a pretty sizable gas line running from my meter across the back. And I remember specifically asking those guys, did y'all call 811, right? And we actually delayed the project because they forgot to call it on a Friday. And so they called it out. They didn't actually
I'm curious, when you got a, because you likely used somebody who gave you a proposal.
I did.
Yeah. When you got a proposal, did it say that was 811 in their timeline? That would be interesting. Because that might be where it's at, right? If we start requiring our contractors to include 811 in their timeline and as a kind of like a procurement requirement, that might be interesting, right? Yeah.
And I know a lot of times, again, I've seen a lot of work done in and around my neighborhood. Sprinkler, that contractors, people that do that, it's just, man, I think those guys get in a habit of not calling it. And this is where I say I do think that the lesson falls to us, Chris, is we should stop our contractors. Like, when you have people that you're hiring to do irrigation work, if they're digging, you should stop them. And let me make it real for you again. We're talking about natural gas pipelines, right? Which can have the likelihood of creating an explosion and loss of life.
Yeah.
But in many cases, it doesn't have to be that as well, right? So I read an article the other day about a homeowner in Houston who was installing a fence in his backyard, and the fencing contractor hit a bundle of fiber optics. And just so the audience understands, when that happens on your property, whether it was you or the contractor, you're responsible. And in this case, the contractor left him with a six-figure bill, over $100,000 for the repair of the telecommunication lines that they hit. You can imagine they dropped an auger and the auger just wrapped up the whole,
What's interesting is, see, that message seems to be effective.
The cost message?
Yeah, like that message of, hey, Houston, putting in a fence, hit a fiber optic, 100 grand, be careful. It's like, whoa, that's effective, right? Like, I got our 811 mailing late last year.
How many of them do you get, by the way?
I would say...
Because I tell you what, I live 850 feet from three very large pipelines, and in a decade, I've gotten one mailer.
I live... Actually, I'd have to count a little bit. Give me a second, because you know I have the arroyo in the back of my yard. I would say it's probably...
That's Spanish for river.
It's probably a quarter mile away from the house, I would say. It's probably about a quarter mile from the house along the arroyo in the back. And I say I probably get one about once every 2 years, ballpark.
That's more frequent than I do.
Yeah.
Is it just one operator in that right-of-way?
It's one operator.
Well, then
so about every 2 years I'll get one. But what I would say is it's, you know, some people question is mail really an effective way to communicate? You know, because that's one of the things I thought about, right? When you were like on the one in Lawrence, it was like, you know, with 4 years prior, he had received the mailing. I was like, you know what happens for a farmer in 4 years?
That's a lot. Point.
Right, a lot of things happen in 4 years. And so for me, it begs the question, and our podcast is not to bring in marketing subjects and all that fun stuff, but rather just, I think we could have probably an equal amount of impact on our community if, you know, if you see something, you say something. Like, hey, don't forget to do 811. hey, don't get a $100,000 bill.
Probably more effective than the mailers, to be
like,
honest.
For us, I mean, in the urban environment, we're a little bit more stubborn because we're like, eh, I know where they are, or eh, it'll just be a telecommunication line.
Walk across to your neighbor's house when you see their contractor digging and they haven't called 811 and stop them.
Yeah. Did you call 811?
Yes. But I, you know, so I think that brings up a challenge because I actually see it's interesting. Yes, I don't think mailers are necessarily effective, but I think it brings up a challenge that we have in pipelines. It's kind of like a catch 22. We actually don't want people to know the pipelines are there. We really don't. Uh-oh. We want them to know. We want them to be aware, but not know, right? Like, because we want to stay below the dirt. If they don't know that the pipelines are there, we're happy because it means we haven't had any incidents. They're not going to interact with them, right? Like, what we don't
want to
do is...
You don't want them to not know. That's why we send out mailers. That's why we have pipeline markers. There's a whole program to do exactly...
We do.
To work against what you said.
We do, but we don't for the right reasons, right? Because you also...
No, you want them to be educated is what you want. You don't want them to be naive and unaware.
You want educated awareness, I think, not just blind awareness. And that's fair. But that's really difficult to do.
It's incredibly difficult to do. And you know what else it is, Rhett?
Expensive.
It's very expensive.
100%.
It's incredibly expensive.
Yes. And so that brings us to the challenge. So this lesson, again, I want to say to all of my third party damage people out there and thank you. I shall say this episode was the direct result of feedback from one or two of our listeners. And I want to say thanks because.
But it's not third party damage people. I would say it's.
But there are damage prevention professionals.
Public awareness programs, right? I mean, it's part of IMPs. It's the whole point, I think, what we're trying to say is it's like, it takes all of us.
It does.
In every situation possible to actually make a difference, right? Agreed. If you see something, say something. I think ultimately that's the message. Whether you're integrity or operations or your boots on the ground or in corporate office, there's always opportunities.
Because it matters.
Yeah.
It really does. So, for me, this lesson or this episode was just a really good kind of, it's one of those moments where you just stop and reflect and you realize like, man, pipelines are real. They influence real people. They impact real people. And the consequences of not doing something that's pretty simple can be catastrophic.
And as integrity professionals, it's hard for us to help mitigate this other than taking it to the streets.
It's true.
You can't do it from your desk. Got to take to the streets, tell your homies, tell your family, friends, all that fun stuff.
Yep. All right. So, hey, to our audience, want to say thanks for hanging out with us. Again, lots of additional content for this episode on these four failures that'll be linked. Hopefully you take a look at it and thanks for listening. It's been great. This episode of Pipeline Things was executively produced by Sarah Atir and written by myself, Rhett Dotson. You can find all of the information from these third-party incidents on the PHMSA website in the form of their failure reports. Thanks for joining us.